Let's talk about wayfinding this morning. Wayfinding. What in the world is wayfinding? Well, the sermon this morning had a couple of different inspirations from it. The first in the title of the lesson comes from the most interesting podcast I have listened to all year. I know some of you, like me, are podcast addicts, and you listen to just so many of them. I'll explain what wayfinding is in about 15 minutes and explain why it's such a relevant idea for what we're talking about. But very briefly, before we talk about wayfinding, I would like to just do a quick retrospection of this year. Just look back and think about 2019 for a second. Y'all know I have a spreadsheet with all of my sermons, etc. in it. And I always like to go back at the end of the year and just see, what did I talk about? What did I talk about? And why did I talk about it? And I oftentimes don't know the motivation for my preaching until after the fact. It's almost as though there are subliminal things going on that I don't know exactly why I preached about it till later. But this year, I think a lot of my sermons have come from two events that happened in the last week of January, first week of February of this year. Within the course of 1 week, Jessica and I found out two very big pieces of news. The first very somber, the second very happy. The first, and I've shared this with you before, is I found out the last week of January this year that one of my best friends in the world is not serving God in any way, shape, or form. Just done some terrible things. And it has been very, very, very difficult to deal with and still working through those emotions. Many of you have helped me and Jessica and talked to us about this because we've had to grieve. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about because I haven't shared a lot of the details publicly with that. It's personal. But that was something that weighed very heavily on both of our hearts throughout this whole year is, how does someone who you think was brought up in a good home, brought up with Christian values, brought up believing in God, absolutely, teetotally turn their back on him for the sake of the world? Why does that happen? Why does that happen? Well, the second piece of news is much happier. Within that same week, we found out we were expecting. We didn't find out we were expecting twins till a few weeks later, but we found out we were expecting. And it's great news, but it's weighty news. Because perhaps my mind was just primed from what had just happened, but the question that has been on my mind throughout this whole year is, how do you raise children to truly serve the Lord? How do you really raise children to truly serve the Lord? It's a very personal question, isn't it? For you parents, we get emotional just talking about the upbringing of our children. I mean, parents by our nature get upset by dietary choices, much less the spiritual implications and eternal consequences of our children. But how do you really raise children who are not going to give in to the way of the world, but really are with their whole life, with their whole soul, with all of their being, serve the Lord? And so many of the sermons that I preach this year have really come from those two strands of thought. So many times I've talked about the heart, the being, the soul. Really, I think my series about the image of God came from this series. So much of what I've talked about is, how do you really teach and instruct someone to love the Lord and serve him? So this morning, what I'd like to do is ask the question, how do we find the way of the righteous? There's no question, it's difficult to find. So many fall from it. But how do we really find the way of the righteous? For this, we're going to begin in the book of Ephesians. Before we get to Ephesians 5, I'm actually going to take you back to Ephesians 2. There's a couple of verses I want to show you here. In Ephesians 2, Paul has a sharp contrast between two ways of life. Ephesians 2, begin in verse 1. And you were dead in the trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience. Notice the nature and form of this lifestyle. Notice a key phrase, though. In once you once walked. Verse 10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared before him, note, that we should walk in them. Do you notice the contrast in these verses? Paul has a sharp contrast in verse 2 between walking in darkness, walking in the way of the world, and then in verse 10, walking in good works. There's two different ways of life. Either you walk in darkness or you walk in light. Either you walk in righteousness or you walk in sin. That is the sharp contrast that Paul delivers. And he's going to continue this contrast throughout the rest of the book of Ephesians. Look over to chapter 4, verse 1. I, therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called. That harkens back to chapter 118, the calling and the worthiness of it. Walk worthy of the calling. Walk worthy of the calling. Verse 17. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. What's this verse? Not walking in light, but walking in darkness. Over to chapter 5, verse 2. Chapter 5, verse 2. Paul commands, walk in love. Walk in love. Chapter 5, verse 8. Verse 8. For at one time you were in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. And finally, chapter 5, verse 15. Look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. Paul draws upon this imagery of walking, which he introduced in chapter 2 and really develops in chapters 4 through 6, and explains you have two different ways you walk. You either walk in light or you walk in darkness. You walk in wisdom or you walk in foolishness. You walk in good works or you walk in sin. That is the basic nature of our walk. The one I'd like to really focus on comes in verse 15. Paul here again says in 5:15, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. The question I'd really like to disentangle a bit, what does it mean to walk in wisdom? What does it mean to walk in wisdom? Now, of course, this is a metaphor that Paul is using. And whenever Paul talks about walk, to walk is to follow a course of life. That's my just general definition of what it means to walk. Paul, of course, is not literally here saying with your 2 feet walk. To walk is just your general course of life. It's the course that you follow. We understand this imagery, right? We use it all the time. It's the path of my life. It's the course of my life. It's the way that I follow. What do you do on the course or the path or the way of life? You walk on it. And what Paul is introducing here is a sharp contrast between two different ways, two different paths, two different courses. And the one I'd really like to think about is, what does it mean to walk in wisdom? What does it mean to walk in wisdom? This, I believe, is the key to understanding what it means to walk in righteousness. Well, much like everything that Paul wrote, it wasn't original. He stole it from the Old Testament. And I think, likewise, this idea here of walking comes right out of the book of Proverbs. Probably many of you already made this connection back to Proverbs, but let's be turning there together. Go back with me to Proverbs chapter 1, please. Proverbs chapter 1. The book of Proverbs was written by King Solomon, who we just finished a quarter studying about. And it was written to his son to instruct him. The book of Proverbs is a very personal book because it's a book from a father to a son telling his son, this is what I want you to know about life. And Solomon is going to introduce this division between the two paths of life. The first one that he's going to offer is the way of the wicked. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 15. Proverbs 1, 15. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Here's what Solomon has just said. Sinners come to entice you. They tell you to do fun things that actually end up being sinful. Do not walk in the way with them. Do not walk with them. Don't follow them. He says likewise in chapter 2, verse 13, Proverbs 2, verse 13, those who forsake the path of uprightness, who walk in the way of darkness. Notice what they're doing here. Those who follow enticement, those who follow unrighteousness, they are walking in darkness. And finally, chapter 4, verse 14, this I think is the most poignant of the verses. Do not enter the path of the wicked. And do not walk in the way of the evil. Do not enter the path of the wicked. And do not walk in the way of the evil. Well, before we continue with this, I'd like to recommend, much as I think Paul drew this imagery of walking from Solomon, I think Solomon drew this imagery from his father David, who wrote in Psalm 1, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers." That progression of walking, standing, sitting is going to be advanced in Proverbs 1 through 3. And here's the warning that Solomon gives his son. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not enter the path of the wicked. It is the path of unrighteousness. It is the path of sin. Do not walk in that way. Don't walk it. What's interesting as you go through Proverbs is there's not a middle ground. He doesn't offer his son a middle ground here. But he says, this is the way to walk. Avoid it. Avoid the path of unrighteousness. But likewise to this, and the good news for us is, Solomon is going to offer a second path of living, a second way to walk. Look at Proverbs chapter 2, verse 20. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 20. So you will walk in the way of the good and keep the paths of the righteous. Tony Mock loved this verse. I think he mentioned it every sermon. So you will walk in the way of the good and keep the paths of the righteous. Isn't that great? You don't have to follow the path of darkness, but rather you can walk the way of the good. Over to chapter 8, verse 20. Over in chapter 8, verse 20, Solomon likewise will urge his son. This is here wisdom speaking. She herself says, I walk in the way of righteousness, in the paths of justice. And finally, there's going to be a hearkening call in 9:6. Leave your simple ways and live, and walk in the ways of insight. Do you notice here the way of insight is what Paul would call the walk of wisdom? So here's the idea. Solomon tells his son, do not enter the paths of ungodliness. Walk the way of light. Walk the way of the righteous. Paul is going to say, walk the way of wisdom. Well, then I think we have to answer the question. It's quite obvious which road we want to be on, isn't it? I mean, isn't it obvious which one we should want to choose? Spoiler alert, it's the way of the righteous. Why? Well, quite soberly, Solomon is going to tell his son, for all of those who fall and walk in the path of unrighteousness, he says, that is the way that leads to death. But rather, Solomon will likewise say in 312, the Lord reproves the one whom he loves as a father and the son he delights. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. 3:18, she is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her, and those who hold fast to her are called blessed. Ultimately, the way of righteousness, the way of the wise, leads to life and goodliness and blessing. Of course, that's the road that we should want to be on. But here's also the sober realization. Which road's easier? Which road's easier? Easy question, isn't it? The easy road is the first road. You know why? Because the world tells us at every little crevice that it can, follow my way. It's fun. It's pleasurable. It's nice here. Here you get to enjoy yourself. Here you get to find enjoyment and pleasure in everything that I'll give you. The world entices. But the narrow way is the way of the wise. How do we find and walk the way of the righteous? For this, I'd like to talk about wayfinding. Wayfinding. Now, I said this was introduced to me by a podcast I listened to. I'd never heard this term before. But there was a book published earlier this year by a journalist who is interested in wayfinding. Her name is M.R. O'Connor. This is a summary of the book. O'Connor is interested in how we get around. Specifically, she wants to know how humans, both as individuals and culturally, can navigate and explore without the aid of devices like maps and GPS. Now, that's fascinating to me. Whenever we first moved to Louisville, I was glued to Waze. Waze is another version of Google Maps. MapQuest, for those of you in the 90s. I was glued to it. If you had asked me how to get anywhere in Louisville, I was going to get my GPS out. I think, seriously, going from the Briscoe house to here, I used my GPS for the first 6 months. I mean, I was so lost in Louisville. Trying to figure out the difference between 265 and 264, who did that? Tell me, who did that? I mean, Old Shep, this is the one that gets on me for a second. I'll rant just for a second. Randy Renner's heard this. Half of you people would tell me I need to take Old Shep to get somewhere. The road sign says Shepherdsville Road. I looked for Old Shep for 6 months because I didn't have the humility to ask that it was actually Shepherdsville Road. I was so lost when I moved here. It's a confusing town to get around. How do you navigate without a GPS? And I was really curious to know, how do people in this world, in the 21st century, get around without a GPS? Let me continue. O'Connor uses the experiences of Inuit, Aboriginal, and Polynesian cultures to illustrate different aspects of scientific inquiry into how humans approach getting around the world. Listen here. For the Inuit, this involves intense knowledge of what to our eyes might seem a barren environment, using patterns in the snow and ice to determine wind and travel directions. For the long-distance sailors of Polynesia, it is their ability to read waves and currents in their relationship to the stars. For the Aboriginal people, it's the stories and songs attached to various pathways handed down from the dreaming. Navigation is cultural. It's cultural. It shouldn't be that much of a mind-breaking conclusion, but it is. We navigate based on our upbringing. For those of you that have seen the Disney film Moana, it's based on real Polynesian navigation, where they're able to use the waves and the stars to navigate thousands of islands. You put one of us landlocked Kentuckians out there, we're lost as an Easter egg. For the Inuits, they're able to look at snow patterns, and they're able to tell how to get home based on snow patterns. For the Aborigines, they're able to use their stories to navigate the land. And I think, of course, we understand. We use landmarks. Never once in Louisville was I told, yes, to get to the Keys House, you take 61 South to 261 East to this. Typically, it's, okay, go out to the Thorntons, turn left. Whenever you get down to the Thorntons, keep left all the way. You're going to go past Walmart. You're going to go past Kroger. And then eventually, you're going to turn right whenever you see this little neighborhood sign. Go up the road right there on the left. Use landmarks, right? It's so in tune to us, and especially for those of you that lived here and grew up here. You're able to go to most parts in the city and just go here. Driving around this city with Kirby or Daniel, it's crazy. I mean, they're able to know backways and alleys and gravel roads in the middle of nowhere that are just able to take you to places. That's wayfinding. It's fascinating. But brethren, here I think is the problem. We are able to get around our own town. I can get you around Bowling Green in a snap. I still have difficulty with Louisville, to be honest. How do we wayfind the way of righteousness? Much as the Inuit are able to use snow to tell which way to go, and the Polynesians are able to use the waves to go, and where to use landmark, how do we wayfind the walk of the wise? How do we wayfind the walk of the wise? Here's my fear. I'm afraid that too often we think that we are navigating this world through externalizing it to a GPS or to someone else without really navigating it ourselves. Let me explain what that means for a second. Let me explain what that means. whenever I finally put my GPS down in Louisville and just let myself get lost, I was able to really find my way around pretty well. Because it demanded, I'm not going to let someone else think for me. I'm going to learn to walk this way and drive it the way I should. Whenever we stop allowing other people to tell us how to live, and we actually start asking, how do I walk the way of the righteous? That's when we'll find it. But how do we? How do we navigate? How do we wayfind the walk of the wise? Solomon doesn't leave us to guessing. Go to Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4, begin in verse 20. Proverbs 4, begin in verse 20. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ears to my saying. Let them not escape from your insight. Keep them within your heart. For they are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance. For from it flow the springs of life. Put away from your crooked speech and put the devious talk from you. Let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. How does Solomon tell his son to wayfind the walk of the wise? It's by guarding the heart. Guard the heart. We use landmarks to navigate around the city. The Inuits use snow. The Polynesians use waves. The righteous are guided by the heart. And brethren, I think retrospectively, the reason that I have talked so much about our fruit tree, about our heart, about our anchors, about our insides, about the prongs on the ring, about the center of the nesting doll, is because I have realized quite practically this year what is at stake. If the heart is not filled with wisdom, it will be led astray by enticement and by sin, and we will find ourselves lost in the middle of nowhere, trying to find ourselves out of the way of despair, in the way of unrighteousness. But if we guard that fruit tree and that heart, we walk and we navigate the way of the righteous. That's what Solomon tells his son. But there's a couple warnings that have to go along with this. Go over to Matthew chapter 7 with me. Matthew chapter 7 again. I do believe Proverbs was the inspiration for this image that is given in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7:13. Matthew 7:13. Enter by the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. Brethren, this is the warning. Guard the heart. Guard the heart. What is it that separates mankind from all the beast? It's not spirit. We talked about this a while ago. It's heart. What is it that navigates the way of the righteous? What is it that navigates the path of goodness? It's the heart. The center of us, the very core of our being, that is what is going to navigate us on the path of uprightness. And for that, I'd recommend the heart has to be trained. It has to be filled. And I'd like to take us full circle by closing with 2 Peter 3:18. The verse that was the inspiration for our theme this year was 2 Peter 3:18, which I've come to realize is so connected to so many different trains of thought that I've tried to follow this year. But 2 Peter 3:18. But grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. To him be glory both now and to the day of eternity. Amen. What must fill the heart? What must fill the heart? What needs to mold the heart? What should shape the heart? What should drive the heart? Grace and knowledge. Grace and knowledge. I've come to see quite practically that those who leave the Lord and those that have no desire to serve Him are not really filled with God's goodness. They're filled with themselves. Just stop and consider all of the good things that God has done. All of the good things that God has done. Out of His love, He made us. Out of His mercy, He saved us. Out of His grace, He sanctified us. Out of His wisdom, He will glorify us. He provides for us. He gives us one another. He gives us air to breathe. He gives us water to drink. He gives us friends to cherish, family to love, the Scriptures to listen to. I've just begun the list. But is your heart really filled with grace? Is your heart really filled with all of the good things that God has done? There's a real quick way to test yourself. Look back on your footsteps and ask what you've left this year. If your heart has been filled with God's goodness and God's knowledge and God's grace, that's the only thing you have to leave behind you. But if your heart has been filled with the work of the flesh and with yourself and with sin and with pride and with arrogance and with selfishness, look behind you and look at your steps. To me, I think it's the end of every year where we need to stop and we need to look backward. And we really need to stop and ask, what way am I walking? Many are deceived. Many truly think they're in the way of righteousness, but they're living for their own selves. They're blinded. May such not be said of us. But brethren, may our hearts be circumcised. May they be sanctified. May they be filled with God's goodness and God's knowledge. Quite practically then, as a parent, what is it my responsibility to do? What is it my responsibility to do as a father to fill my three children's lives with? I think above all others, I've come to see myself this year as a guardian. As a guardian. As a cherub. You remember in Genesis 3, after man and woman failed in protecting the garden, what God did? God put cherub right at the edge of the garden to say, don't let anything else wicked enter here. As you end the book of Revelation, the such is true. The cherub were there to guard that which was precious and that which was holy and that which was good. And such is my responsibility as a father. To be a cherub over my children's hearts. To not let my children's hearts be filled with vanity and with pride and with foolishness and with sin and with unrighteousness. But to guard their hearts and fill it with goodness and knowledge and instruction and prudence and wisdom and love and righteousness and humility and kindness. Because, brethren, when our heart is so filled with the goodness of God, Satan shouldn't have any room in our hearts. And never, ever should the way of the wicked be enticing to us, because we know how good we have it. So let's go back to our original question. How do we walk and how do we find the way of the wise? My recommendation, let us walk the way of the wise by filling our hearts with God's goodness. That's wayfinding. You can be getting your songbooks out at this time. Every year I can look back at my spreadsheet and there's one sermon that kind of changes the shift and guides me off another direction. This year, it was my sermon on discernment. Back in February of this year, I did a sermon on discernment. I'm going to just really refresh it real quick. Whenever we look at life's difficulties, we looked in particular at a Christian artist who had some uncertainties with how to deal with sexual ethics. How do we navigate the complicated, confusing, uncertainties and all of the questions of our age. Now, recommendation from Hebrews 5 was you have to have discernment. And I've really tried to think through over the last real 11 months since, what does that mean? What does that look like? And the avenue that I've come back to time after time after time after time after time again, brethren, is it demands wisdom. It demands wisdom. The heart must be so filled with God's wisdom that foolishness and sin have no chance of getting their grasp on our hearts. It's wisdom. And we've talked various times about what is wisdom, what is true godly wisdom, what is false wisdom, what is foolishness, etc. We have to be filled with wisdom. Well, as I do each Sunday morning, this is the last invitation that I'm going to offer the entire year. Kelson's doing the invitation tonight. Right, Kelson? This is the last invitation I'm going to give this whole year. Are you going to walk the way of the wise? Or are you going to walk the way of the wicked? The first step is putting that foot in the waters of baptism. It's a small little step, but it sets the whole course of life in another way. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, come forward as we stand and sing.